Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 279 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Kara O'Brien. And Kara is the managing partner at a firm here in Baltimore called the Law Office of Evan Thallenberg. It's a well-known and well-established firm, and you're going to hear how she came to join that firm straight out of doing her clerkship and has now gone on to become the managing partner for the firm and is helping to steer this established firm through the phases of growth and adaptation to technology and, you know, dealing with the pandemic and all the kinds of things that we've all had to address in the creation of our law practices. So it's an interesting perspective, and what she also brings to that being a mom. And so she's particularly attuned to the challenges and the issues concerning attorneys who are trying to raise a family. So it's a pretty interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did having it. And without any further delay, here is Kara O'Brien. Kara O'Brien, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, Neil. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I am delighted to have you with us today, Kara. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So I'm Kara O'Brien. I'm the managing partner with the Law Office of Evan K. Thallenberg. I got here kind of in a different way than most lawyers. When I was small and going through college, I wasn't really sure I wanted to be a lawyer. I started as a math major and quickly realized that Calc 3 was not for me. So I switched to an economics major. And somewhere down the line, someone said, you know, economics really lends itself well to legal thinking. So I took the LSAT and I did pretty well. I remember the guidance counselor at my undergrad telling me it was like getting an A on the LSAT.
Oh, good.
I figured, yeah. So I figured, why not apply to law school? I applied to law school. I enjoyed my time at University of Maryland. And while I was in law school, someone said, hey, you know, these clerkships are really great. So I did a clerkship. I really enjoyed my time in the courtroom. I realized that litigation was what I wanted to do. And then I answered an ad in the Daily Record. I was actually reading the newspaper. I had an interview with Evan Thallenberg, and Evan is just such a wonderful person. I really fell in love with his personality and his outlook on how he ran his firm. And it's been 13 years. So Evan founded the firm to represent children poisoned by lead paint. And since I started 13 years ago, we have transitioned to do all kinds of serious personal injury matters. And we're in Baltimore, Maryland.
Well, let me circle back a couple of steps. I got to tell you my quick LSAT story. When I was prepping for the LSAT, I took the practice exam 11 times. I'm kind of overachiever. And my score never deviated more than about 3 or 4 points. And if you averaged them, that was the exact score I got when I took the LSAT for real. So
that's so funny.
I think the test is well calibrated. Did you clerk in Baltimore City?
I clerked in Harford County, Maryland. Okay. So yeah, it's
so nearby.
Yep. Yeah. And it was a good mix because they have some military there, some farmland, some more suburban areas. So we got a really good mix of all kinds of cases and juries. And it was a really wonderful experience.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'd forgotten that there's that much kind of cultural diversity in Harford County. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners that aren't in Maryland, they won't know what that means, but still, you're right. military, farmland, suburban. You had it all really there.
Yeah, it was great. And it was a smaller courthouse. So my judge wasn't stuck on a civil or a criminal docket. So I got to see a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And that was really good for me at the time because I truly still did not know what I wanted to do. I did a ton of things in law school. I did employment law, securities law. I did protective orders through the Women's Law Center. And I knew what I didn't want to do, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So finally getting in the courtroom and seeing civil litigation, I realized that that was what I wanted to do.
So when you came to the office of Evan Thallenberg, was he a solo then or a small firm then? Or what was the nature of the firm that you were joining at that time?
So Evan definitely started out as a solo. I know it's always been a family firm. His wife, who is an amazing woman, she's super smart and motivated. She was involved. And then his daughter, once she graduated from college, was involved, both of his daughters. And so it really started as a family focused firm. Evan, as he needed to do so, added attorneys. So when I came, I think there were three other attorneys, male attorneys, and I was the first female in that group back then. So it was, I never know what the definitions are, but I guess you would define that as a small firm, less than five.
Yeah, it's all in the eye of the beholder. Small firm can be five. I have had people tell me small firms, 20 attorneys, so it's all just relative. So when you joined, they were primarily doing, as you said, lead paint litigation with some other, catastrophic injury type work. And now tell us how that's expanded to include, more areas of practice.
Sure. So in Baltimore, unfortunately, we have a huge problem with children getting poisoned by lead paint in the homes that they're renting or that, their family members own. And so Evan started a medical malpractice and they started getting calls for lead paint poisoning. And as I understand the story, and this probably isn't my story to tell, but he saw a future in lead paint cases, but the other lawyers were kind of looking at them as birth injury cases, and they weren't really sure what the future medical costs were going to be because it's a brain injury. And once it's done, it's done. It's permanent and it's irreversible. So Evan saw a future in it. He took a lot of risks in leaving a very well-established medical malpractice firm here. They're still in business. They are, they're a wonderful firm. Evan left and started this firm thinking that there was a future in representing lead poisoned children. And he was right, but he definitely had to, pretty much develop the theory and work the cases up. And then thankfully, I've been here for 13 years, the firm's been here for 25. Thankfully, 25 years later, there've been a lot of changes in how our government agencies stop, it's just, there's been the huge push to stop lead poisoning in children. So less children are getting poisoned, which is great. And I always said when I started here, the day we don't have a lead paint case will be the best day because I never want to see a lead poisoned child. But we recognize that from a business perspective. So years ago, we decided, we are really good at doing serious brain injury cases, and that's our bread and butter, but we also do all kinds of serious personal injury cases. So whether it's medical malpractice, nursing home negligence, premises liability, where there's, a brain injury or a serious injury to another other area of the body, it just kind of flowed well from lead paint cases. So that's how we got to where we are today.
Well, we don't normally talk about the substantive aspects of law on the show, but I'm a little curious as to how lead paint cases are differentiated now from, as you said, from traumatic birth injury cases, or is there a distinction or a difference?
Depends. So the court treats them differently here. We have our own scheduling order, our own track. The way the damages are presented is loss of earning potential. So it is different than some kind of other serious personal injury cases, but sometimes not. But the best thing Evan did was put into place really great systems. So we could put any kind of case through our system. And that was really, really helpful when I started managing the firm 4 years ago. So, I think that's the important thing is to make sure that you can be really good at one thing, but you have to have systems in place that can address everything, right?
For sure.
So, yeah.
And so I want to delve into that for a little bit, but let's kind of complete the journey for you. So when you came on board, were you exclusively focused on lead paint cases yourself, or did you start to branch out into some other types of personal injury cases?
No, I did all lead paint for about 8 years. And then because this is a law entrepreneur, I love this story, but Evan came to me. I was a month back from having my second child, my second son. I was a month back from maternity leave, and Evan came to me and he said, look, you know, I built a really great firm and I've got grandkids and I've got things I want to do. I want you to manage the firm. I want to step away. He's always there for big picture stuff, but the day-to-day stuff, he said, I want you to do. And for me, that was the best thing that could have happened, because I was at the point where I was like, you know, this is a lot. It's, you know, doing depositions, being in hearings, reviewing records. It's a lot of time, and having the ability to manage the firm at that point in my life, it seems counterintuitive, because you would think I would just want the same old, same old. But it really gave me the opportunity to manage people and look at our technology and look at our, like I said, our systems and marketing, and get into all those kind of business things that I didn't do when I was doing lead paint cases for 8 years. So that's kind of how it happened. I did lead paint cases for 8 years. And then at this really counterintuitively wonderful time in my life, Evan said, look, I want you to run this thing. And it was perfect, because I loved learning all of the business aspects of running a law firm that I hadn't been doing for the prior 8 years.
It's perfect timing. And, you know, one of the challenges I think we see frequently for people who are, you know, assuming the mantle, such as you did with an established firm, is there's some inertia. And, you know, it's a delicate act of management to kind of address our future needs with respecting where the firm has been and how it's done business to that date. Did you find, you know, a challenge in that respect, getting that ship to turn a little bit into a different direction?
Oh, absolutely. And you can't see me, but I'm smiling, because it's like the dream to have the ability to manage a well-established, well-respected, well-oiled machine. But if you have that entrepreneurial side, which I realized that I did, I was looking at things. I'm like, okay, but how can we be even better? And, you know, what are we doing? And I started reading all the books, and I don't think podcasts were, I know you've been around, but eventually I started listening to all the podcasts, and, I started going to our staff who's been here to, as a testament to how wonderful our firm has been. You know, our office manager has been here for 27 years, our senior legal assistant for 15, we have an intake coordinator for 10. So, you know, to tell these wonderful employees, look, we're going to do things a little different. And honestly, that's really when technology started taking off in terms of what we can do. At least from my perspective, and maybe I just hadn't seen it before then, but in the past 5 years, I think we've made great strides in changing how technology can run our firms. So it is having this well-established law firm with these wonderful, wonderful employees, and then saying, but we're going to shake things up a little and see what we can do even better.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right in terms of the timing, because, you know, 15 years ago, I'm going to say at that point, there was maybe 20 years, 15 to 20 years ago, there was pretty much one way you ran a practice. There weren't a lot of options. There weren't a lot of technology options for you. And just the business of law was pretty standard. Then as technology came on board, more and more opportunities presented themselves. And people said, well, there's a couple of different ways that you could run a practice. And so I think you were right there, right at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I'm a weird generation where I, like when I was a kid, I listened to cassette tapes and I remember winding them with a pencil.
Sure.
But when I started practicing law, I had a BlackBerry, and I don't remember practicing law without having access to my email 24/7. So I have, it's, you know, you would think I would be great with technology, but it's a learning curve, and I feel like it's always changing. And, you know, in 2017, I was making decisions about servers. And I remember saying, like, what is this cloud thing? Like, we're going to have a server in the building. I don't feel comfortable with this. And now we have to go to the cloud, right? But I think things are changing so rapidly, for sure.
Yeah, the slope of that curve is increasing exponentially. It was a time when you could kind of keep up to date with most of it, if you were so inclined, but it's a challenge, and it's one that we as attorneys face all the time. You know, you have to remain technically competent, but you know, the technology world is shifting every single day. So let's talk about some of those challenges that you had. So you didn't necessarily have a staffing challenge because you were already an established firm, but you certainly had a management challenge. How do I kind of move this firm in a little bit of a different direction and overcome that inertia? So how did you address that? I mean, what were some of the key points of your focus then?
Yeah, I think, you know, we, like I said, we were a well-oiled machine, but I really wanted to figure out, because I had never seen the behind the scenes of what Evan did with, you know, our employees. So I had to figure out how to manage people. And I got a business coach. And since then, I've had a couple. But that first business coach really helped me in the human management side of things. So I read all the books, Drive by Daniel Pink and Radical Candor. Yeah. And he's good for so many things, but you know, productivity and what motivates people, and Radical Candor was a good one. But I just started, started reading all the books and trying to figure out, like, you know, what can I do to make sure that we have the right people in the right seats doing the right thing, that they feel fulfilled, so that they're doing the best for our clients, because ultimately our clients are the most important thing. And it's a lot to wrap your head around when you have been, you know, in the ins and outs of depositions and hearings for the past almost decade. But it came at a good time too, having children, because that was right when my little guy was probably 3 or 4. And I always say, it's kind of like the same, like, you know, if someone's in a bad mood, are they hungry? Are they tired? Mm-hmm. Did they not get sleep? You know, it was good timing for me. Not that adults are like children.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you're not the first one to relate managing a law firm is akin to raising small children. So there's a lot of similarities there. But I think what's interesting, and we don't often focus on this enough, is that, you know, managing the human experience, the human potential of a practice, and is every bit as important as the technology or the systems or, you know, the nuts and bolts of the legal process. And in some ways, it's more important because that culture permeates through everything. And if you get off on the wrong foot there, it's going to be really tough to recover.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I couldn't have put it better. It permeates everything. It's how your clients are treated. It's how we speak to the court. It's how our referral sources see us. It's how our vendors see us. I mean, it is, if you don't have the right firm culture with the right people, it is, you're dead in the water. I mean, you can try all you want, but you're not going to go anywhere.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works. And we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time, because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. This episode is brought to you by Security Plus. Do you ever worry about ransomware, losing client data, or your employees getting phished? You know that 29% of law firms have suffered a data breach of some type or another? As a solo or small firm lawyer, getting hacked can make a crushing impact to the high integrity and reputation that you've spent a lifetime building. That's why I love Security Plus, and I'm excited to bring them on as a new sponsor. It's a turnkey cybersecurity solution built for solo and small firm lawyers like you, who often lack the clarity, time, and skills to protect themselves from cybersecurity threats. Security Plus protects your firm with 8 security solutions. And the best part is that it requires just 1 hour of your time to get everything up and running. So check out this new solution at securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. And that's securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. You can grab their security checklist as a freebie and lock in 10% discount for life. Again, that's securityplus.io/Neil. And ironically, you know, when we were in law school, you know, I complain and moan about how ill-prepared their law school graduates are to run a business. That's the whole reason for this podcast. But even beyond the business side of it, the managing humans, it's a skill set. And it's one that can't be ignored.
No. And if you don't do it well, it makes your life so much more difficult. And if you do it well, it pays off in spades. So it's so exponentially important, because it can go really bad or really good. But it's hard, because you never know what is motivating someone. And I think about that with our clients too. You know, if our clients are upset or happy, you know, we try to figure out what's going on behind it. And It's all about managing human emotions and the experience that everybody brings to the table. And I think that's why litigation is so wonderful too, because, you know, you get to work with the witnesses and get in the minds of the juries and all that fun stuff. So it all kind of goes together well.
Sure. Now, when people talk about managing the human capital, they often use tools to help understand what motivates one another and what the strengths and weaknesses are. And I'm thinking of things like the DISC personality evaluation, or Colby, or I just took one called PRINT.
I took that too.
Yeah, that was, I'll give a shout out here to Mike Mogul. It was part of his Evolve Summit that just completed last week. And I've had a healthy I'll stick with disrespect for the moment, about these kinds of evaluation tools. I never felt like they were useful to me personally. I know lots of people base a lot of what they do on the results of those kinds of evaluations, but it never seemed to really work for me. That PRINT one was the absolute closest I've ever seen to understanding what motivates me and describing me. So my question to you is, Do you use an evaluation tool like that in managing the firm in some fashion?
Well, so I did take the print too, and I attended the CRISP Evolve Summit, which was fantastic. They did such a wonderful job. But I've done them myself. I've done the DISC. My first coach had me do the DISC before she would work with me. And it's funny again, because I've had administering some sort of test in that regard to our employees on our strategic plan for a while. And it just gets bumped from year to year because, yeah. You know, it's one of those things that it wouldn't take a lot of time or resources to do it. But I feel like we are working together so much that we know each other, we know what makes each other tick. And I think to your point, a lot of those are better for self-reflection than it is to figure out, okay, well, this person, you know, they're motivated by this, or right, this is what's right in their personality. So I think it's more, I like to do it. So I've done it for myself, but not our employees. And I think that's probably the mm-hmm. best use of those.
Right. So do you have a human resources platform that you work with within the firm?
We do. So we have an HR coordinator here. She kind of wears a couple different hats, but in all candor, she's my sister. So mm-hmm. I brought her on to kind of continue the family theme. And when she came from a big corporate company, and she said, you need some kind of software to run your HR. You can't be keeping spreadsheets and paper files. So we went with Bamboo HR. Yeah.
That seems to be the consensus. And how has been your experience using Bamboo as your HR platform?
Well, I will say, since I manage everything, I don't go into it as much as she does, but right, I think she really enjoys the, you know, the time off requests, organizing the files. I like it. I was actually looking at it last night to remind myself how long everyone has worked here, because you get reminders about birthdays and anniversaries. And it has reduced the email flow for her, because she's not getting email requests for time off. You just put it in there and she approves it and it tracks it. So I think it's made her life a lot easier for sure.
Well, it's certainly one of the challenges that you have if you're taking a solo or a small firm to that next level. One of the first things that you come to understand is that, well, we've been doing our HR such as it is by the seat of our pants and just inventing what we need to invent to manage the people at our firm. But once you start to get to a certain, you know, level, that's not sufficient. And I think Bamboo, I don't know much about it, but everybody I talked to said, look, this is the platform to use for that purpose. And so I'm pleasantly surprised to hear that you use that. How about now case management? Again, there was a time when, in particular, personal injury practices felt like the case management tools that were out there weren't particularly optimized for their practice area. Do you have one that you use?
We do. So we did not. And then I started thinking about processes and reduction mm-hmm. of email. And so we ended up exploring quite a few, and we went with Needles, and because they were founded as a personal injury case management software. And I'll say case management because it really is case. It's not, and I'll explain in a second, but you know, so we went with Needles, but as I've been looking at it and we've really been implementing it, it's been a long process.
A long journey, huh?
It is. Because like I said, we have been well established and everybody knows their thing and they've got their habits and we've got our spreadsheets and we're good. But, you know, I think once people start to see those little moments of how it's going to make their life easier, they start to buy in more and more. But I mean, man, I thought it would be like flipping a switch. We're going to use Needles. And it's been a long journey. But I started to realize that it didn't do the before and after. So we are now, I guess I'm just asking for more pain, but we're implementing Lawmatics as well. So we can do that like pre-retainer intake
sure.
kind of organization, and then the post case reviews and CRM and all that. So that's kind of what we put together as our practice management software.
Well, you're adding all the big pieces. And again, with an established firm, that sometimes is more of a challenge than it is with an emerging firm.
Yeah. And it's changing. It's really changing systems that were working really well in the first place. So, but you know, I think with COVID, it made us realize we need to be able to access things from a browser on our phone and not by logging into our server. And people are really starting to realize that we do need to have these, this technology in place so that we can be as efficient as possible. And I keep talking about my kids, but I feel like I was sitting down to answer hours of emails every night, and my kids are getting older and they're not going to bed as early, and I don't have the time to do that. Right. And I started thinking about it, and I read a book that really changed my perspective on it. And I was like, we have to use this software because, you know, between the automations and the checklists and the workflows, it does what email, you know, what we're using email for. And that was fine, but I don't want to be answering emails for 2 hours a night.
Yeah, it replaces those email chains with, mm-hmm. you know, the workflows and the checklists and the processes. So it's really important to do. And how about billing? Billing is a different kind of issue in your type of practice. How are you handling that?
Yeah, because we're all contingent, so we don't bill our clients, obviously, and then all of our vendors. We have QuickBooks, and which is funny because we made the jump to Needles Neos, their cloud-based software, and it doesn't integrate with QuickBooks. And then we made the jump to QuickBooks Online, and it only integrates with the desktop QuickBooks. So, see, this is where technology kind of trips me up, and I want to throw up my hands and walk away. But
it,
I know
it gets a little. There's a bit of a disconnect at times, and hopefully. Mm-hmm. The world will catch up with itself and everything will work again. Yeah. Seamlessly. You mentioned the COVID experience, and you know, you can't have a conversation these days without, you know, reflecting on what we've been through thus far and sadly are still going through to a degree. How did the pandemic affect your business and in your response to it?
Well, as a litigation firm, and the courts being closed, it was certainly really difficult to move our cases along. And as a personal injury firm, you know, not a lot of people were going out and getting injured. So we really took the opportunity last spring and summer and even into the fall to look at our systems and look at our technology. And that's really where a lot of these changes have either started or we've really put our foot down and said, all right, we're going to do this, because we had the time to reflect on, you know, the past years and how everything's changing. So it was, you know, it was a tough road, as I think it would be for any personal injury firm. But I always like to say, and I'm sure there are a million motivational quotes out there, but you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And we really refocused. And I know you had Andy Gross on your show. He is a wonderful person. And, you know, I sit down, I think it's my duty managing the firm to look at all our financial statements once a week. And I'm sitting down and looking at them, and I'm looking at Andy and his caseload. And I'm like, he should be a solo. The numbers don't add up with our firm, and the caseload that he had, you know, really would have been better in the systems that he had in mind. So, and he has that entrepreneurial bug, but I think it took COVID to take a step back and say, you know, we're not just plowing ahead with our typical day-to-day stuff. And I think really good things have come out of it for a lot of people. I know it was really tough, but I think if we want to look at it optimistically, a lot of changes were made that are going to benefit us for a long time.
You know, it's fundamentally has changed the practice, I think, going forward. So we'll see how much the pendulum swings back. I don't expect it to swing back a lot. I think we're going to continue to deliver legal services the way we've been doing over the last several months. I think we're going to continue to do that well into the future and beyond. Let me ask you, just kind of wrapping up here, social media is key to a lot of practice areas, maybe not so much with an established firm like yours, but I'm curious to find out to what extent, if any, do you focus on social media aspects of your practice?
Sure. So marketing has always been kind of like a love-hate thing for me. I love it sometimes, and sometimes it's frustrating. And I partnered up with a really great marketing company, so I trust them to run our social media. We tried to do it in-house for a little bit, and it wasn't working out. So they're really great about you know, making sure our Facebook, and we really focus on Facebook and LinkedIn. But then I personally started an Instagram handle about 6 months ago for lawyer moms, just to kind of put some tips out there, because I read all the books and listen to all the podcasts, and I feel like I accumulate all this information. And again, I think, why have it in my head if I don't share it with the world? So that's kind of like my side project. It's kind of my passion. But as a firm, we've got our Facebook and our LinkedIn, but it's hard. And I'm trying to get more on LinkedIn. But then you've got, you know, I listen to everything and I'm like, wait, do I need to be on TikTok? Do I need to be on Clubhouse? It's like, it's an ever evolving thing that, you know, it's really,
but that's why you've outsourced it to a digital marketing company, so that you can, you know, stay at a high level and let them worry about working, you know, in the grassroots level. And let's just also spend a little bit of time talking about that passion of yours on your Instagram accounts, where you address the needs of moms in the practice of law, because I think it's a special category of attorneys, frankly. I'm a dad, and I know what experience I had practicing law with small children, but it's fundamentally different for moms. And so share with us some of your thoughts in that area.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what I'm really passionate about. It's, you know, and being the managing partner of our firm, I do the hiring and I go to hire, and I would love to hire a lawyer mom. And it's hard to find them, especially in litigation, because they're gone. You know, they had their kids and they don't want to put in the hours. And, you know, that's just been my experience. So I'm really passionate about mentoring and trying to encourage and provide information for other working moms, because we need our communities to support us. We need these little tricks, you know, how to get things done, how to manage our time, how to stay sane. We need all of that. And I'm really, you know, really, really passionate about making sure that other lawyer moms know that they can stay in the game. And if they can't and they need to drop out of the workforce, I want them to get back in if they can. I know everybody has to make the best decisions for their families, but I think it's really important to recognize that as lawyer moms, we also bring a really special skill set in working with our clients. So it's just, you know, it's a tragedy in my view to have moms drop out because their firms don't support them and they feel like they can't handle it, because you know, the clients are missing out, the legal community is missing out on some really, really wonderful lawyers. And so I try to just, you know, anything I can do, encouragement, let's just not take ourselves too seriously. Let's learn some of these tricks to make the most of our time.
And sometimes it means simply commiserating with others.
Yes.
You know, sometimes just a willing partner to listen to what you're going through is extremely valuable.
Yeah. And I remember I had a really wonderful coworker, and he was a dad. And I remember saying to him, like, how are you this really busy litigator? And he was our managing attorney. And how do you do it? And he had two little girls. How do you do it? And he said to me, some days I feel like a superhuman, and some days I don't know how I'm going to get out of bed. And it's really resonated with me, because on those days that you feel like you can't get out of bed, you need to be able to, you know, open your Instagram or your LinkedIn, or just think about something you listened to or you read, and realize everybody feels this way. It's okay to feel that way. Tomorrow is going to be great. And we're all really, you know, in it together. So I think it's really important.
Well, Kara, I think that you have a lot to offer in that community, and I hope people take you up on that in that regard. What's the best way for somebody to reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you had to share or offer with us today?
Sure. So, as much as I don't like email, I will say, please feel free to email me. It might take me a day or two to get back to you, and I might just send you my Calendly link so we can just quickly book some time to chat. But you can email me at cobrien, so C-O-B-R-I-E-N, at ektlaw.com. And then if there are any moms or dads or anyone out there that wants to check out my newish Instagram, my handle is Pro Bono Mom. So it's P-R-O-B-O-N-O-M-O-N-M-O-M. Yeah. And it is, you'll see some cute pictures of the kids and hopefully some, you know, fun and tangible stuff that you can walk away with that might make life a little easier.
That's awesome. Well, Kara, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today, and I appreciate you being on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. I love the show. I really appreciate everything you're doing for the legal community, and thanks for your time.
That's very kind of you to say. Thank you. Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.